Good Wednesday morning. I'm Anna Palmer, and welcome to your Politico Playbook audio briefing.
And I'm Jake Sherman. Here's some news. Jonathan Martin and Alex Burns of the New York Times, both Politico alumni, are writing a book that aims to be the definitive assessment of the 2020 election as a turning point in American politics and the most complete account of Trump-Biden campaign and its consequences. The book is slated for publication in 2022. The New York Times is another tax bombshell, this time looking at records and how they shed new light on how Trump unsuccessfully spent a decade pursuing projects in China. He has a bank account in China.
In the last few days, President Donald Trump was apparently so angry with CBS's Leslie Stahl that he cut short an interview and tweeted out a clip of the anchor without a mask. He said he would release the entire interview. CNN's Caitlin Collins and Khalil Abdallah reported that Trump decided against sitting for a joint interview with Vice President Mike Pence. Trump also retweeted a conspiracy theory that Osama bin Laden was alive and the raid was a fake. He has continued his lambasting of Anthony Fauci, who, according to the new Politico Morning Consult poll, is viewed as having done an excellent or good job by 63% of respondents. Just 38% say Trump has done an excellent or good job. He's also launched personal attacks against Joe Biden, who is viewed as favorable by 54% of the respondents.
Trump versus Obama in the Keystone State. Anita Kumar in Erie is reporting that Trump is facing his old foe in Pennsylvania. Holly Otterbein in Philadelphia reports Obama is going full throttle for Biden. We've reached day 92 of the COVID relief talks. Stephen Mnuchin and Nancy Pelosi are scheduled to talk later this afternoon upon Mnuchin's return from the Middle East to see if they can continue to make progress on a COVID relief deal. A few notable elements. Pelosi sent a letter to her colleagues last night saying she made progress with Mnuchin and is kicking over some of the technical details to committees, something we're not accustomed to see Pelosi doing in a situation like this.
Here's the headline Pelosi World will like. The New York Times has this one. McConnell moves to head off stimulus deal as Pelosi reports progress. Let's dive into the playbook decision matrix. Pelosi held out against a lot of medium-sized deals during these last 3 months in search of a big one, and is now seeing Mnuchin completely capitulate in front of her eyes, upping his offer to nearly $2 trillion in spending. This is the art of the deal, you know. Say no repeatedly over 3 months, and then say yes at the last minute. Score no policy wins, relent on all of your previous views, and split your party while accruing little political benefit to yourself because your timing is so bad.
If you take the most charitable view, if Pelosi and Mnuchin come to a deal, it's not certain that whatever they produce will pass the Senate before or after the election. So it's fair to ask this, why is she still in the game? Well, no one wants to be left holding the bag if this falls apart. Plus, it validates her theory of the case that Republicans were always going to desperately crawl back to the table. But there are questions. Why is she handing the work over to committee chairs? Pelosi's not one to delegate when time is short. Mnuchin, who we've dubbed Washington's most eager man, clearly wants a deal badly enough that he was able to toss aside White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows after a few months and restart talks on his own, relenting on policies and top lines. Mnuchin seems eager to get a relief deal, and Trump seems eager to get a deal. Mnuchin seems eager to please him.
Trump clearly wants something to brag about. His presidential campaign has turned into an unfunny episode of Seinfeld. It's about nothing, yet everything at once. This deal would give him something to talk about. A leader's power is keeping his troops together, and if McConnell were to put the $2 trillion relief bill on the floor the week before the election, well, more than half of Republicans would vote against it, and endangered lawmakers who voted for it would not be guaranteed a political bounce. So, he's sitting on his hands in the Capitol and trying to urge the White House to pump the brakes. He's not involved in the talks, won't get involved, and we'll see how it shakes out. His world believes that a deal is further off than both Pelosi and Mnuchin are letting on. And if an accord is reached, they do not believe there will be time to get it through before Election Day. He's also not looking to get ahead of Trump, a president whose opinion frequently changes by the hour. Remember, Republicans will get to vote on a $500 billion bill today, which theoretically gives them some political cover.
Let's project out a bit. Let's say Pelosi and Mnuchin come to an agreement Friday after the debate between Trump and Biden. Let's assume it takes all weekend to get drafted and gets released Monday. The House has a 72-hour rule, so the earliest a vote could be is next Wednesday, which is October 28th, or 6 days before Election Day. The Senate would at least need a few days to process this. Do you think the Senate will return to D.C. to consider this bill in the run-up to the election, or will they wait until after November 3rd? 8.2 million Americans have contracted the coronavirus. 221,076 have died. The New York Times is reporting a third coronavirus surge has taken root in the U.S., particularly in places like North Dakota, Anna's home state, where the Fargo Forum is reporting that the state is overwhelmed by cases and has told residents to do their own contact tracing.
Politico has a story up looking at how the White House is considering cutting COVID funds and newborn screenings for anarchist cities. While John Bresnahan and Burgess Everett report on Senate Democrats agonizing over Senator Dianne Feinstein and her position atop the powerful Judiciary Committee. While Mark Caputo and David Siders report that Bloomberg's cash in Florida has knocked Trump on his heels. The Times reports that Trump's campaign only has $63 million in the bank, compared to $177 million for Biden. And the Post has a report up on how threatening emails were reportedly sent to Democratic voters in Florida and Alaska, claiming to be from the Proud Boys, but actually appeared to be a deceptive campaign.
Andrew Desiderio was down in South Carolina for us and reports Jamie Harrison won't say a bad word about Trump. Here's what's on tap for Trump's Wednesday. The president will leave the White House at 4:45 for Gastonia, North Carolina. He'll arrive at Gastonia Municipal Airport at 6:55 and speak at a campaign rally at 7. Afterwards, he'll return to Washington and will arrive at the White House at 10:30. Vice President Mike Pence will travel to Portsmouth, New Hampshire and speak at a campaign rally. He'll also travel to Cincinnati, Ohio, where he'll speak at another campaign rally, and then he'll return to D.C.
And on the trail, Kamala Harris will travel to Asheville, North Carolina, and speak at an early vote launch mobilization event. She will then travel to Charlotte, where she will attend virtual fundraising events and a voter mobilization event. Subscribe to Playbook at politico.com/playbook. And one last thing, Politico has a new podcast launching today, Global Translations. Host Louisa Savage, Politico reporters and global experts are going to be taking a hard look at how the pandemic is impacting supply chains and the everyday goods we rely on, including PPE.